Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 180 of Getting It Out podcast. That was The Sniper's Gaze by Domination Campaign. These guys are out of Tasmania. They're a death metal duo, and they got a new record coming out July 9th on Prosthetic, and it's called Onward to Glory. And this is, I don't know, maybe it's the first, maybe it's the second, maybe it's the latest single off that record. Single. Who's playing this on the radio? I don't know. But it's the latest release from this album, and it's very cool. That riff kills in the beginning. It features Joe Haley, who you probably know from Psycroptic. It also features Jason Pepiat, who's also in Psycroptic. But Joe Haley, not quite as well known as a drummer as his brother Dave Haley, who's a former Getting It Out podcast guest, who was on here to talk about Psycroptic and their album As the Kingdom Drowns a couple years ago, which is crazy to say. That was like episode 40-something. I had Dave Haley on to talk about Psycroptic. But these are two guys from Psycroptic starting another band, Domination Campaign, and it's killer. And Onward to Glory is awesome. And that song you just heard, The Sniper's Gaze, is obviously great. So what more do you want? There's a music video out there for you if that's what you're thinking. You can watch that instead. But yeah, that's it. So what does that have to do with this episode of the podcast? Well, this episode of the podcast also features another Prosthetic Records band, The Day of the Beast, from Virginia Beach, Virginia, and we're going to talk all about that. And I'm going to talk to Steve and Steve Redman, Steve Harris, to be exact, from that band. And let's just get into it right now. Cue up that hot zone.
Yeah, what's good, all you bitches and bitches? It's the illustrious Hot Zone, back at it again with another podcast intro. He said, oh, you want to do a podcast intro for the Getting It Out podcast? I said, oh, shit, I got to write a rap verse, don't I? He said, no, you don't got to write a rap verse. It's a hardcore podcast. I said, all right, I think I can maybe make that happen. Let's see what we can do. Kick it. Make family out of friends, make friends out of enemies. Peace to my family, make friends till they bury all the places we've been. We're never sitting it out, we be getting it in. Where you getting it out? I said all the places we've been. We're never sitting it out, we'll be getting it in. Where you getting it out? Get in and out! Alright, motherfuckers, you're in the right place at the right time. Rest in peace, Jay Money, and LFTW forever!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Glad you're back here with me again. It's the day after Independence Day, the 4th of July. It's July 5th, if you're listening to this as it came out. And I only bring up that date because of the intro that you just heard. Now, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, you're familiar with the intro from Hot Zone there. And at the end of it, it says, rest in peace, Jay Money, NLFTW forever. And this time around, I think I should point out what's happening there. I don't know if I've ever actually done that before. That is saying, rest in peace, Jay Money. His name is Jason Calhoun. He died 2 years ago this weekend of suicide. And that's not something that usually gets acknowledged at the time. I even did a couple of podcasts where we promoted the benefit shows for him and his family. And I don't know that we ever said what that was. And I understand why you don't acknowledge it at the time. But I think it's important that eventually you do. And this time of year, although, you know, it's literally my favorite holiday. July 4th is my favorite holiday of the year because it's not really tied to anything other than fucking Independence Day. But who gives a shit, really? It's just about having fun and being laid back. And unfortunately, it's also a date that correlates with the death of one of my good friends. And as I said, deaths that are from suicide and usually overdose too, you're not told what happened when they happened, and you're kind of left to put the pieces together. And I understand the privacy parts of that, but I think those are also the two most important things that need to be known, because people need to know how much of a problem it is and that they in themselves are both their own epidemics, especially in times that we're currently in. I mean, the shit's awful and it's not easy for anyone, but we really do need to just accept it, acknowledge it, reach out. And the most important thing, of course, is just talk to people. Sometimes that's all it takes. So we always talk about how easy that is. But it's also really hard to do too. It's hard as shit, especially if you're socially awkward, to just call somebody up and say hello. Send a text, send a voice note, do whatever. Just say hello to somebody you haven't talked to in a while this week. You know, it goes a long way somehow, some way, more than you'd ever expect, more than you'd ever want to know. You have no idea how much you can help somebody. I lost a lot of people in my life from suicide and overdose, and I think not all of them are preventable, but, you know, who knows? It's worth a shot. Okay, so enough of that sad shit. I hope you drank drinks. I hope you made explosions in the sky with your little fireworkies, and I hope you enjoyed your holiday weekend. And if not, if you're from another part of the world, I hope you enjoyed your weekend still. This episode, as I mentioned, features an interview with the Day of the Beasts. Two members, to be exact, Steve Harris and Steve Redman. First, let's check out their track, Disturbing Roars at Twilight, and then let's get into my talk with these two fellas.
Wisdom. I'll hear the sound of swelling madness. I'll fear the now and then he dies.
Fellas, Steve and Steve, that's easy for me. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it won't confuse anybody.
Yeah. My name's Dan, by the way. So
how you
thanks.
Doing, Dan? Going nice to meet man. You. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad to have you guys listen to this new record. And I'm gonna stumble over it every time I try to say it. Indisputably carnivorous? Carnivorous?
It is kind of a weird thing to say phonetically.
Doesn't roll off the tongue very well.
Yeah, that was my bad. Sorry, guys.
Nah, it's all right. That's good. It's but I like the title of it though. It's a very very cool sounding record.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I gotta tell you, I wasn't totally familiar with The Day of the Beast until very recently. So if you could just give me the basic Day of the Beast, where did the Day of the Beast come from?
The Day of the Beast was started by Casey Rader and Eric Barlow, and they were the two original guitarists. And they were jamming out some thrash songs with another drummer named, I think they were all in a band together called Clandestine in like the North Virginia, Virginia Beach area.
Yeah.
I think they did death metal and they wanted to go kind of a thrashier route. And I think they started a new project. And I ran into a gentleman at a local record store that sells like punk and metal records, Skinny's Records. And I met just like one day, just out of like happenstance, I went in there, and Joe Frost was in there, and he was doing a preliminary, we'll say, yeah, preliminary bass duties for the band before we actually got like a proper bass player.
Yeah.
And we were just like kind of shooting the shit while I was in there. And he told me, he told me about, like, his thrash band was looking at a vocalist and looking to get a vocalist, and I told him, yeah, sure, I fuck around with screaming in my car and shit like that, so yeah, fuck it, I'll come down. I was kind of being flippant. I was kind of just trying to make conversation, and then I guess he passed the word over to the guitarist, who proceeded to blow up my MySpace about it back in the day and just, like, pester me to come on out. So, you know, I came running out, and that was that.
Did he entice you with adding you to his top eight? Was that at all in the cards?
Well, I hadn't quite hit that level yet, but I figured that would be a good way to weasel myself into it.
This is important, the top eight, man.
Yeah, man. And it was great because you were always able to tell whenever your friends were going through shit, because they would take everybody out of their top eight and they would put hands in it.
That's like super dramatic. That was like so dramatic.
Yeah, that was like, you had to call your buddy and be like, dude, are you okay, man?
You all right?
You got like Nine Inch Nails as your number one friend. Come on, man.
That's funny. The MySpace days alone are funny. But I guess we're just living a different version of that now anyway, so... That's not...
Hey, man. Humble beginnings from everybody.
Yeah. So what year is this? Maybe you mentioned it, but what year... I know when you guys have your first recorded stuff, but what year did you actually get together?
This is 2007, but I think, according to canon, we started in 2006, but I can't really confirm the validity of that. But
what?
Like, I definitely... Yeah, the first time I went to... First time I ever went to a Day of the Beast practice and met the guys was 2007, for sure.
Was that the name? Was the Day of the Beast the name of the band from the beginning?
Right. Yeah, I already knew what the band's name was. The band name is named after the horror movie, the Spanish horror movie.
I'm not familiar with it, but yeah, that's because I'm a giant pussy about horror movies, and I don't watch them unless I'm watching them with my wife, because she gets more scared than I do, and that makes me feel better.
Well, it worked out kind of cool at the beginning because they already had T-shirts for the movie, so those were kind of like our bootleg kind of unofficial T-shirts for a little while until we got real T-shirts.
Nice. So, is there a Day of the Beast? Is like on the calendar? Can I like circle it?
It's every day, man.
Oh, Jesus, that's a big circle.
It's a heavy workload, man. No days off.
All right, so when you started it, you know, you kind of said what sound they were going for, but like when I listen to the band now, there's a whole bunch of, I don't know, what would you say, like a whole bunch of subgenres of metal that I hear in there that I could pick things out of. Was there a primary direction that the band was supposed to go in when it all came together, and has it changed much since 2007, 8, 6, whatever?
We were definitely going for the black thrash kind of sound. Like, we kind of wanted to be like a version of kind of like The Crown or God Dethroned, where it wasn't like, where it had like enough of the death metal elements in it, and it was still like fast and aggressive, and it was melodic but kind of tastefully done, not to where it was just kind of overly pretty or anything, you know. We wanted to keep that rawness of it. And especially our original guitarist KC, he was the biggest black metal guy out of all of us. So I think he left the band like amicably, and kind of that was like the last real link to us being a black thrash band. And ever since he left, it kind of got, because the rest of us were more death metal guys, and we kind of stepped more towards death metal as each album progressed after he'd left the band. But we'd still kept a lot of the bits and pieces of the black metal stuff too, which, you know, is cool. It makes for kind of a unique sound in some ways.
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely a combination of things going on here, and like, I mean, the obvious inspirations that I hear, or you know, calls to genres that I hear, the black, the death, the thrash, all the things that you said. Yep. Is there anything underlying that you think is in there that some, like a casual listener or someone like myself who's just kind of getting into the band, isn't going to recognize? Is there an influence for the Day of the Beast, or maybe just you personally, or either of you personally, that you put into this that isn't so obvious?
I don't know. A lot of people compare my vocals to Jeff Walker from Carcass, which as much as I like Carcass, they're not really an influence on me as far as like my vocal style and what I want to do musically or anything. So it's kind of funny how like 99.8% of every review I've ever read for any album we did compare me to Jeff Walker. I'm really kind of like, I wanted to go for more like Paul Bailoff. Like if Paul Bailoff listened to some of those Legion era Marduk albums, kind of like how he would adjust his vocal style after doing that. That's definitely more like what I'm going for. But if people want to get Jeff, people want to pull Jeff Walker out of that and say that's what it sounds like, I'm definitely not insulted or anything.
Dude, I kind of feel like when I read reviews for other bands, lots of other bands, I think Carcass is just a very common band to compare bands to. I don't know. Sure. I mean, and I do actually, the more I've read these reviews and the more I listen to our album, I'm like, yeah, I hear it a little bit. Even in the music, I hear it a little bit. It wasn't necessarily intentional. But I mean, Carcass is, I mean, I've always loved Carcass, but I never really tried to sound exactly like Carcass or anything.
Sure. Well, I can hear all the things. I can hear the Jeff Walker thing and I can hear the Carcass in the music too. But Carcass has a couple different sounds. So that's a pretty broad, you know, scope with when you say Carcass. I know, I think we all think of the same type of stuff. But yeah, you can pretty much say, you know, that's like saying, I don't know, who's another band who's had a couple different phases where you can be like, oh, it sounds like this. And that could be like any subgenre of heavy metal. But fuck it, the Carcass is a fine comparison, whether it's accurate or not. That's good company.
No insults here.
Yeah, that's cool with me.
So before we get into this record, I just want to do a little more history. The logo, you guys got a pretty interesting logo, and I know, like, you know, logos are important in metal, specifically thrash and death metal, black metal even. But what the fuck is going on in your logo? It's like you got almost the symmetry, but not quite. And there's a couple of characters in there. What's happening on this thing, and where did it come from? Who made it?
It was made by a gentleman named Christoph, who does logos for like a lot of pretty well-known bands. He's I almost want to say he did Emperor's logo, but that feels like something I would be horrendously wrong about. But I want to.
That's all right. Let's just make it a fact. Let's just say it happened. We don't.
Fuck it. He made Emperor's logo. But he's like anybody else. He's like Joe Patango or whatever. You can just hit him up and he'll help out anybody. So fucking, he gave us a cool logo, and we told him some of our lyrical themes, and he put like this cool little Undertaker guy with a shovel, and there's bats flying out, and there's the cool little chapel in the middle of it that kind of like splits everything in half. It was like you said, it's symmetrical, but it's got the little things on each side that kind of make it stand out on its own. I'm into it. I've always liked it. It used to have a lot more thorns in it back when we were more black metal influenced, but over the years, we got rid of the thorns and kind of just made it spiky and bony looking.
That's good, because you don't want people seeing your logo and thinking, that's a bunch of pricks.
Yeah, and plus...
Did you get that great joke?
I got that.
Yeah, all right, good. Thank you.
Plus, it was really hard for screen printers to do that logo with all the extra shit going on in it.
Well, screen printers are the worst printers there are. So as someone in the printing industry, let me just... say some complaints about the screen printers. I'm kidding. I don't have any complaints about the screen printers, but I do actually from a screen printing stance and from knowing how to screen print that, I can see how that would be an issue. So that actually makes a lot of sense.
I think so.
Yeah, it really does.
It absolutely does.
Yeah. So you guys have been doing this now for several years. You've been looking at your discography. You've got a few. How many actual full lengths is there? Is it just four, or is there more?
There's four, and then one EP.
Okay, all right. So I see all the right stuff. I see you've done some stuff with Horror, Pain, Gore, Death, which is the I don't even love everything that comes out on that label. I just love that label exists.
Mike's a really cool guy. Yeah. He has fantastic taste in metal, and it was cool working with him.
And you did some things with, I'm going to say this wrong, too, Canonical?
Canonical Hours. That's our man Alan down there in Richmond. I keep wanting to say Newport News. I'm not used to the fact that he lives in Richmond now.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was a big help to us first two albums.
Awesome. Yeah, so you guys did all that, but now you're I don't know how many years is it now? Let's just say 15 years later.
And, yeah, just about.
That's
and
insane.
You're putting out your first full length with Prosthetic Records. Steve, I know you got a little bit of relationship with Prosthetic from your other band. Is that how the Day of the Beast ended up here, or what happened?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Fortoken was signed, and then, you know, the Day of the Beast, we had been working on, we had like a whole album's worth of material. So I was like, yeah, would you guys be cool with that if I sent it to him, to Steve Joe at Prosthetic? And so I sent it over to him and was like, what do you guys think of this? And they loved it and they wanted to release it. So it's pretty much how that happened.
That's awesome. And it's a great connection to have. And, you know, I've had a few Prosthetic bands on here over the last year or so. And obviously, well, I guess it makes sense that you would only hear good things when people reach out to them. But I actually had other bands on here who aren't on Prosthetic who talk about the things that Prosthetic helps them with. And it just seems like such a cool label to be a part of. And the thing that I particularly like about this Prosthetic Records, about that label, is the diversity in it. When I had Catan on here recently, who doesn't sound a whole lot like you guys, I had ACXDC, who's, you know, fucking Power Violence. That's nothing. Yeah. Like, you know, Sermon from England, who's, you know, just prog shit. But I love the diversity of the label.
They have so much. Yeah, they have so many different types of bands on there.
It's kind of a pain in the ass to try to keep up with it, to be honest. But you know, that's a good thing.
They're all super nice. Like everyone I've talked to from Prosthetic has been so cool and so nice and so supportive of everything. So it's been awesome.
Awesome. Well, so that of course brings us to this record that I can't say, indisputably carnivorous. Did I get it?
Yes, that was correct.
All right, cool. So this record's been out for a week now. Right? Oh, just a little, not quite, maybe? June 18th?
A week tomorrow.
Yeah, so how, I mean, I know you had some quote-unquote singles come out, you know, leading up to it, but how has the feedback been since this record has been out the whole way?
I mean, it's been awesome. We're basically a Carcass cover band. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's actually been really good. All the reviews we've seen have been great. I mean, even the ones that weren't so great weren't bad.
Yeah.
You know, their complaints were, you know, it sounds like a death thrash band. You know, that's their complaint, basically.
It's not a bad
thing. Sounds like death thrash. I'm not really into it, so I'm going to give them this rating. I'm like, okay.
There was the one guy who's just like, man, all their songs are just, they're too fast and they're just too relentless. And hey, what do you want us to do about
that's
that?
That's the idea, that like right?
The entire point of the album.
Well, that's funny, but I can tell you for sure, as a person who used to write and still does sometimes write record reviews, people who review records don't have a fucking clue what they're talking about, myself included. And a lot of it has to do with the mood. and sometimes I used to write really, really mean, terrible, like really mean record reviews. And I really do regret doing it. I did that shit for like 10 years. And I wish I hadn't because, well, I think it's cool to put like something critical down and be like, hey, this, you know, I don't like it because of this. It's totally dickheaded to just tear it apart. But I know for bands that sometimes if you go into the right headspace, reading a negative review can actually, you know, enlighten you a little bit. Has there been anything that reviewers have pointed out on the negative side that you thought, huh, that's a good point? Let's change that.
I would say a lot of people said it was too long or too many songs. And I don't know if that just has to do with the way media is consumed nowadays. Everyone's got such short attention spans. Maybe 10 songs was too much. And, you know, people say some of the songs start to sound the same. They start to blend together or whatever. I mean, that's the main complaint. But It's funny because I know I talked to Steve about this too. We were both thinking people would think that the songs were too different. But when we put it out, everyone's like, oh, well, it just kind of blends together. And so, yeah, it's, I mean, I don't really know what to do about that. I mean, we write.
Like, the only reason anybody would ever say that it blends together is because it's just so fast and there's a lot of things going on in it.
There's no, I mean, like, I guess yeah, there really is no break.
Attention spans.
If you're looking for a break, there really isn't a break. I mean, right. To me, a break would be a mid-paced heavy song, as opposed to like a really fast, fucking, you know, insane blast beat song. But that's, you know, that's the way I look at it. But.
Sure. I mean, if it was up to me, I would hear those criticisms and I would just push the next record to like 300 BPMs every single song.
Yeah. I mean, it really doesn't bother me
with that kind of feedback, because I just want to go even faster and even heavier for the next one.
For sure. Yeah. And, you know, I agree with you, Steve, what you were saying about the way that people listen to music now, the attention spans, because I talk about this all the time, but I want to listen to fucking albums. I always want to listen to albums. I have a hard time with like playlists and like, I don't know. I just like, I want to take it all in as one. And I think that's the way that I initially heard this whole record, was as one thing. And I don't know. That's just, to me, that's just because, like you said, like you guys are saying, you want it to be fast. You want it to be an attack, and that's exactly the way it sounds. And it doesn't let up. And I think that's its strength. Definitely not a weakness. But whatever, you know, like you said, some people want some, they want a break, and I don't think that's here, and I think that's fine. So how much of this record is, you know, over the last year and whatever, how much of this record was a product of the pandemic? Was it written, recorded in that time? Was it before or after? I guess it can't be after, but yeah.
I mean, I can't speak for Steve on like the lyric side. But I feel like for us, a lot of that was written before, like pre-pandemic. We kind of like split the songs up. Like Bobby, you know, the other guitarist, he wrote like 5 songs. I wrote 5 songs, and we kind of brought them together. And but most of the ones I wrote were pre-pandemic. We just kind of had them around for a while. The pandemic gave us a lot of time to really learn about recording, basically, and drum production and all that stuff. So that was good. But as far as lyrics go, I mean, I don't know, Steve, did you write any of those?
I wrote everything on a bartender secluded fucking cocktail napkin with a hooker's lipstick about 2 days before I recorded.
That's the way to
that's
do it.
I figured.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had like backwards R's and everything because I was so drunk.
or so into Korn.
Yeah, you're really into the band Korn.
Well, let's
yeah.
not get carried away here.
Well, Steve, so I guess I should be more specific when I say Steve. The other Steve, your lyrics and the themes in this record are all based off of different writers and tales, right?
Yes, correct.
Is that all right? First of all, you're going to have to tell me more about that. But before you do that, is that easier than coming up with your own, or is it harder to write based off of somebody else's words?
This album is actually the first time that I didn't, like, I have a song that wasn't directly taken from like some sort of movie or book. Mm-hmm. And that's Corruptor and Festor.
That was the first song,
was
right?
Yeah. The opening song. And that's completely from my own imagination. Now it's based off of things like The Thing and Alien and even a little bit of Stranger Things, with well, at least when it comes to that whole like 80s Cold War, Russian Space Wars kind of angle to it. And so, yeah, I drew a little bit of inspiration from that, but that's all from my imagination. And then the other songs kind of take off with like a little bit more of a focused like literary direction. Clive Barker, Bram Stoker, Lovecraft, obviously, fucking the Bible, the cool parts of the Bible.
Fucking the Bible.
God damn, the Bible.
That's a wild book.
It is fucking crazy, yeah.
So, all right. So, I just have a question about the Lovecraft, the Barker, all that stuff. See, I've been listening to metal my whole life, and I've heard, so many bands reference it, so much artwork. But I've never read anything from either of them. What convince me? What am I missing? Why should I get into that?
From Bram Stoker or Dracula or Lovecraft.
Either one.
Lovecraft is just like, if you don't like Lovecraft, then like just don't read horror ever, because that's like the blueprint, pretty much. Like, just fucking how you just build those like bizarre ass worlds on top of like what we know in our world. Like, it's fucking spectacular how he does that. Bram Stoker wrote Dracula, and the book itself is fine. I actually, believe it or not, it's one of the few things that I think I prefer the movie adaptations to more than the book. Like, the Bela Lugosi film, the fucking Coppola film, Nosferatu, that's one of my favorite, like, just horror movie icons, horror anything ever. The whole, like, Nosferatu thing, and fucking the original one from the 20s, the silent film, and then the remake in 79, just fucking spectacular.
Yeah, that's a creepy dude. Why doesn't any movie make anybody as creepy as that anymore?
Because
It is
it's
super
fucking
the
creepy.
benchmark is set too high, man. Imagine seeing that shit in the 20s when like movies, especially even horror movies, that's not even normal, and you're just watching this thing, and then fucking that Max Schreck comes out with those big ass pointy ears and those fucking rat teeth. Just fucking terrifying, man. He's like 8 feet tall. Goddamn.
You gotta imagine most people that saw it believed it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah,
Because,
dude. Well, it's a certain sect of the population had to.
right? Like, I don't know. How old are you guys? What are your ages?
I'm 35.
35.
35. Okay,
I'll be 36 next month, actually.
okay, so I'm 36 right now. All right, so we're right at the same age. So
You got it.
you guys probably remember a time when you could have been convinced that Bat Boy was real because he was on the cover of that tabloid, right?
Absolutely. Fucking, I was actually thinking about that the other
I'm
day
still
because,
convinced. Shit.
like, when I was a little kid, like a little kid going grocery shopping with my mom, and we were in the checkout line, all those tabloids were right there, like right there, just perfectly, like on the eye level of a 9-year-old. Just like, what the fuck?
Right,
Fucking
so I don't remember I don't remember like a strong adult influence ever being like that shit's not real. I think they thought it was real too. And maybe that's just like my, 9, 10-year-old mind, but yeah, I
There
think
was there, there was a market for it.
I think if we go back, 20, 25 years or whatever that math, however that math works out, that people were believing in Bat Boy. So 100 years ago, Nosferatu definitely had to be believable.
I
That's all I'm
mean,
trying to
only
say.
2 days ago, I saw somebody talk about how the COVID vaccine is implanting microchips into you, so people still believe plenty of bullshit.
That's fun. That's a fun one.
Grown ass adults still believe plenty of bullshit.
They
I got
do.
my microchip.
I got mine too. Yeah, I don't mind if you don't either, but I got mine.
I definitely got mine.
Sorry. I know a lot about the Virginia Beach hardcore scene, just from friends and people that I've known through years. But I don't know a lot about the Virginia Beach metal scene. How different are these two things, and what's the state of it?
I mean, I could say just from memories, I mean, there were a lot of. I remember when metalcore was like a huge thing, and it was kind of like you would go to shows and it would be like death metal kids and like hardcore kids, and they would just like fight each other because the
Right.
death metal kids want to
Tribes.
stand there with their arms crossed and the hardcore kids want to swing their arms, and then like one death metal kid would get hit in the face and all of a sudden there's like a brawl. As far as the state of it now, I mean, I really don't know, honestly. We play a lot. I feel like we play more away from this area than we do actually in the area. Wouldn't you say that, Steve? I mean, we play in Maryland and DC.
Yeah, DC, like the whole like DC, Baltimore, Frederick triangle, definitely kind of like our second home base for sure.
Okay, I'm super familiar with that area too. I lived in Baltimore for a long time, and
all right, so
and so you guys would play like, would it be like Cafe 611 in Frederick or where or wherever in Baltimore? Just because you
have a show there, like coming up, didn't we book a show there?
Yeah, that's where the album release party is going to be.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see. I even know. Was it booked through Extremity Retained?
It was not. It was just booked through me and some other random dude who
is just trying to throw guesses together.
People than I do and can get dates better than I can.
Nice, nice. Okay, so
but like I live in Frederick, so I'm right down the road from there. So I figured, fuck it, make it easier for me. And besides, everything in DC and Baltimore was booked up anyway, so because we were too slow on the. Well, I would have booked it a long time ago, but we didn't know what the status of live shows were going to be later on in the year. And then out of nowhere, there's all these like show flyers again, like, oh fuck, we got to book this show really quickly.
Yeah. It did kind of come out of nowhere, didn't it? Like we were all waiting for it. And then all of a sudden, like my wife and I were looking at shows and we're just like, holy shit, we can't keep up. The only things that I bought tickets for so far is Judas Priest.
Me too.
Yeah. Like, because there's too much other stuff, and that one is like, all right, I need to go. That's one of those bands that I've never seen them before because I always think I'll just see them next time, and then I realize all the bands I did that with have died. Like all the bands that I said I was going to do that with have died, and I never got the chance to. So this time around, it's like, all right, we can't fuck around this time.
That's exactly how I am. I was like, I've never seen Judas Priest. And I was like, I got to see him this time. They've come here a million times. The drummer is actually from Norfolk, Scott Travis.
Oh, I did not know that.
Completely fucking random because they're from England.
Yeah, but, Birmingham, England, right?
But yeah, Scott Travis, is. I'm pretty sure he lives in Norfolk, actually.
Wow. Nice Virginia anecdote there.
Yeah. A bunch of the local old school, a lot of these guys playing cover bands now and shit and play like 80s hair metal shit. Around here, but like my uncle plays bass in a cover band around here, but he knows Scott Travis. Like they all fucking know him. It's pretty random and pretty crazy.
That's pretty cool.
Fun fact. Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. Judas Priest is, of course, one of the best ever. But so, all right. So before we go off on a Judas Priest thing, you guys did a video for Enter the Witch House, which was also on a two-song EP that you just did. Why did you choose, and I think you re-recorded it for the record. Why did you choose to do that, and how did, like, what about this song stands out to you that you gave it the whole treatment?
Because it's a lot easier to make a video about witches than it is to make a video about Lovecraftian abominations with, like,
huge
down to the fucking heavens.
That's a great point.
The fucking cosmos just like annihilating everything in their path. So yeah, witches are a little bit cheaper and more budget friendly.
We'll have to hire Pixar for that one.
Yeah, no. Well, you guys did a good job with the video, and you know nowadays when I click on a video link for a metal band, I'm afraid it's just going to be them standing in an abandoned warehouse or in the woods playing. And you guys actually had a little bit of a storyline to yours and made it interesting. So kudos for you for doing that, because that seems to not be the case all the time with metal videos.
That was all in Steve's brain. He was the.
Oh yeah, all the story elements. That was all my idea.
Do you have a? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, here's the. Well, this is cool, but like it didn't quite work out how I wanted it to work out. But like a cool bit of trivia is. You know the Blair Witch Project, the original one from 1999.
Yeah.
There's a scene at the very beginning where they're interviewing the townsfolk, and there's a scene where the mom is holding a baby and they interview them. And the drummer of my other band, Grotto of Lords, is actually engaged to that baby.
I think that's illegal.
Well, believe it or not, it's 2021 and anything goes. But he is indeed engaged to that baby who's, by the way, that was a joke and she's all grown up. But
okay, yeah.
There, yes. So like we jam at their house like all the time. We jam at his girlfriend's house all the time. And I said, well, fuck it. We'll do like the Michael Jackson Thriller video where they kind of turn it into a full little mini movie.
Yeah.
And we said, fuck it. I'll interview Susie and Ingrid about, we'll pretend it's, a 25-year later follow-up to Blair Witch Project without actually saying Blair Witch Project. And so we shot that, and it wound up not making it onto the music video. The director didn't like something about the lighting. I thought it looked fine, personally.
Yeah.
But we're still going to keep the footage as like an Easter egg and a promotional tool for it. But like that was kind of like where I got all the ideas for the video from, is like, we'll make it like a, like Blair Witch Project has a sequel, but it no one likes it and it doesn't count. So I was almost like, man, this could be like a canonical sequel to Blair Witch without actually ever saying Blair Witch. Cause we're right up here in Maryland. Burkittsville is about 25 minutes from me.
Yeah. A friend of mine was in Blair Witch, actually.
No shit. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. I wish we would have known each other beforehand. I could have gotten everybody in here possible.
Yeah.
You should have got the whole crew out here, but that was where we were going with it. And we do have like the interview recorded. We're going to eventually release that as like a little promotional tool or a little Easter egg or something. I think it'll be fun. I think a lot of people like it. Like,
yeah,
old school.
That's really cool. That's a cool idea. It's funny because you didn't tell me that until now, but Steve Joe from Prosthetic was like, yeah, well, we can reuse that footage if you guys want to keep it. And so, because I told him that the interview didn't make it into the video, and he had that suggestion too. So that's cool. Cool idea.
Well, that's very cool. There's a lot to that. Well, which brings me to a conversation I was having the other day, actually. And I just randomly asked a friend of mine, because I know he's a big fan, but he's going off of music videos. What, you know, we're all the same age. So what to you guys were like the big music videos? Because we did grow up in the era where there was still music videos on TV. What was your favorite? Do you remember?
I'm trying to think now. Okay. Maybe. I feel like I remember the White Zombie video for Thunderkiss 65. If we're talking like metal / rock type stuff.
Talking whatever. Yeah, that's a good one from what I remember. I can recall it. Which is a good sign.
Yeah, it's interesting and unique. I mean, I would say something like, oh, Death, for, you know, the band Death, but like I was a little fucking kid and I wasn't into death metal yet, so.
Oh, come on, you can lie your way to credibility.
Yeah, I was bored with a Death t-shirt on.
Yeah. One that always stands out for me is Scorpion's music video for the song I'm Leaving You.
Yeah.
Just like a bunch of like, you know, hot 80s metal babes playing softball. And like the Scorpions tour bus fucking drives by and they all just like throw their gloves down and throw their gear off and just start like chasing after the bus.
I don't remember that one at all, but I do love the Scorpions. I love the Scorpions. And I went to see them somewhat recently with Megadeth and they were fucking incredible still. But anyway, but the Scorpions have a lot of creepy shit going on their album covers.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. I think Germany had a little bit of an odd thing going on there in the 80s. Like, you look at the fucking like Virgin Killer album cover and you're like, wow, that's, I don't know.
yeah, and I think the other one that's a little sketchy, maybe I'm remembering it wrong, Animal Magnetism has
yeah,
some...
with the dog. That's probably my favorite Scorpions album. I don't think that album cover would fly today. Well, the whole Spinal Tap, like Smell the Gloves segment.
Oh, yeah.
That whole segment was like a parody of Scorpion's album covers.
It was definitely a different time. Obviously predates us, but so we can't be blamed for it. But they did write some good music.
I'd say so. They're actually a bigger influence on my vocals than Carcasses.
Well, hopefully,
at least when it comes to like coming up with hooks.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm a firm believer that death metal and black metal can still have hooks.
Absolutely, and that's something that I find interesting about you guys. And I don't think, I think there's a propensity for people into black death metal, whatever extreme metal, to just want to be as fucking extreme as possible all the time, and they lose a lot in that. But whatever. I guess there's scene points of a certain of a certain kind that they're collecting.
Fuck it, man. Drag them in.
Yeah. I always get mad when I'm listening to a song and they don't repeat a cool-ass riff with a badass hook. I feel like when I was younger, I was all about... Because, I mean, I used to play... Actually, when the Day of the Beast started, before I joined the Day of the Beast, I used to play a lot of shows with them in my other band, Saega, which is like a tech death band.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I was like all about some, like, yeah, how many riffs can we fit into one song in 4 minutes? Like, we don't need to repeat shit. Like, this is stupid. Why would we repeat anything? And something I was thinking about, but like the older I get, the more I think about it, and I'm like, man, like when you hear a cool ass part in a song with a hook, when it doesn't, you know, come up again in the song, it kind of pisses you off. It's like, man, I really fucking like that part.
Yeah, I don't know. That kind of leads me to something I bring up not often, but every now and then, which I don't understand, and maybe you guys have an opinion on this. But like, you know how we obviously had the big four of thrash, and they were able to break out in the ways that they did, which was kind of individual for each of them. But like nobody else even got close. So like, who would you say got the least farthest out of the four of them? Anthrax, probably. And nobody else even got close to Anthrax. And it's like a thing that I've been wondering forever. Like, what? Why not? Like, there were so many good thrash bands back then, but nobody could even get close to what those four happened. Do you guys have any theories here?
I would say, like, Testament and Exodus got kind of close.
Close to definitely Anthrax, Exodus. Though?
Like, Exodus shared had Kirk Hammett for a little while.
Yeah, but yeah, that was before.
Yeah, but they, you know, that was the link between like the big four, and then who else came close to that level of success? And I think that might have helped them be kind of one of like the, you know, somebody who came close to those big four.
I got you. Yeah. Okay. I follow. But anyway, so
the Testament just like better Metallica.
You think so? That's a pretty bold statement.
Alex Skolnick or Kirk Hammett?
Depends on what era of Metallica I guess you're talking about. I mean, I feel like the first few Testament albums are pretty on par with like Metallica's 80s albums. I mean, they're really fucking similar, actually. Like, if you listen to them, like the vocals and the riffs are really similar.
I think so.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
like, Legacy isn't very Metallica sounding, in my opinion. That was their first album. I think that one kind of that's why that one stands out so much to me.
Maybe it's just Chuck Billy's vocals. Kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, Alex Skolnick is on like a whole separate.
Oh yeah, he's a way better guitarist. No, you're right.
Hammett. Day of the Beast talks shit about Kirk Hammett at 9 o'clock.
That's what we gotta try to get a. Gotta try to get a hot take, you know, get his attention. So
you need something spicy. That's what the podcasters right.
Well, guys, I don't know what else to say about this record. But oh no, wait, did I go into the? Yeah, I did. I already asked you about that. I was gonna ask you about the. Well, no. All right, so there's a what's the fucking Steve Harris? The other Steve. This one's for you. It has, and I'm trying to remember what the fuck I read. I'm gonna have to look on the fucking screen here, which I never have to do, but I'll have to do it. The album, the name is taken from the novel, The Wells of Hell. What is that? Tell me about that. I don't know anything about it. I want to know. Where
it's a book I picked up in a thrift store, and it had a cool cover and a cool title, and I read it, and it was fantastic. It was kind of it started off with these like microscopic organisms infecting the water supply of a small town, and then they like evolved into this whole these like 7-foot like arthropod crab like crustacean like killing machines who could like summon these floods with telekinesis, and they could possess humans and fucking turn their skin into fucking fucking shells and carapaces. I guess that's how you say it. I'm not a fucking biologist. Somebody will probably correct me on that one.
Don't worry. No biologists listen to this.
And they just, they turn humans into kind of their own kind, and it's all part of this big plot to get revenge on humans for shunning them down back into the fucking, back into like the deep caverns of the ocean, because they used to live on land, but they shun them back down to the deep caverns of the ocean, so he comes back for revenge. And believe it or not, the last part of the book is like the fucking main character fighting Satan in like an underground cavern. So it gets out of control really fucking quickly.
Is that a new book? Is that something somebody wrote like in the?
It was written in the '70s. He's written a lot of stuff, but I'm tracking down a lot more of his material because I really dug what he did.
That's interesting. That's funny. It seems like you got. Are you settled in your approach to lyrical themes and inspirations? I know you said you did the one song on your own, but is this kind of the idea for the Day of the Beast? Is that lyrically from here and forever to just do based off of novels?
As far as like the band's core and themes and just like total foundation as a whole, yeah. Like it's never sway past the straight up like gut wrenching horror aspect of the lyrical themes or anything. Fucking the annihilation of the human race is always fun to sing about, especially, you know, I work in the service industry, so there's just days where I'm dealing with a customer and I'm just kind of looking at them and they're saying words and I'm just like staring at them, just imagining thousands of ways for me to kill them. So it's a good, like, annihilation prayer. That's kind of a version of my usual thought process when I'm dealing with one of these kind of shitheads. So yeah, that I draw inspiration from things like that too, and just horror movies and books and the places my imagination takes me.
Well, I can't imagine. I've never had to work a service industry, and I'm glad I haven't, because it sounds miserable. And I think everybody I know has a similar disposition who does. So I feel
for things like this make it easier.
Good.
It really does.
Good. Well, I know it's only been out a week. And I'm glad you guys have heard good things so far, and as you should, because the record is very cool. I guess there's a lot to come. It's already been, like you said, 15 years, and you guys are now on your fourth full length. You mentioned there's a record release show, but is there any plans for things outside of that? Is it expected that you guys be touring anytime soon or ever?
I would say yes. I mean, we're going to the thing right now is like everyone is touring.
Yeah,
everyone's booking tours. Everyone's booking venues. It's like hard to even find, like Steve was saying, like it's hard to even just find a venue right now to play a show, like one show.
Right.
But I would say next year we'll have some cool tours booked. I mean, you know, we're all old and some of us have kids, not Steve or I, we don't have kids, but like the other guys have kids. So we can only take, you know, a few weeks off at a time, but, yeah, look for us on the road. I mean, I feel like we'll do something, cool either late this year or next year sometime early.
Awesome. Well, I'm not far from you guys, so hopefully I can catch you somewhere down in the Maryland area. Maybe in one of those shows in Frederick, Baltimore, DC, whatever. That used to be my old area. So
we played in Detroit. That was like shit 9 years ago now. You said you're in Michigan, right?
No. I said.
Oh, wait.
I'm in Pennsylvania.
You know, I had an interview last night with a guy who was in Michigan.
Well, that guy sucks.
That's why I was thinking that. Yeah. No, I had a few beers. So.
Oh well. Before we end this, what are you drinking?
You don't want to know.
Yeah, I do.
It's really exciting and new, and no one's ever heard of it. It's called Miller Lite.
That used to be on my list. It's off.
It's
now.
Actually. I mean, I drink a lot of like craft beer and a bunch of like. I really really like a lot of German beer. But Miller Lite's kind of like my go-to if I go by like a 7-Eleven and there's nothing else to choose from. So I'm just like, I'll grab a six-pack of Miller Lite.
That's fair. That's a It's an okay light beer.
Usually I would be drinking Miller Lite, but tonight I'm drinking Bacardi Silver and Green Apple Monster because I'm 19.
That actually sounds fucking delicious, dude.
It does sound good, but it sounds terrible.
I'm trying to watch my carbohydrate intake.
Well, I got to say that I got to join in myself. Well, I drank, as we were talking, what's called a Crevasse Double IPA. So I feel like the hipster here.
That's way too many IPAs.
I finished that one, and then now I've been drinking a Imperial IPA, and this is 9%. An 8%.
Anything with Imperial in front of it, you're getting fucked up.
I did an 8.3, and now this one's a 9. So that's a good way to end the night, right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, fellas. Thank you for taking the time to have this conversation. I really enjoy the new record. I enjoy the band.
Dude, thank you for having us, man. It was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And good luck out there. I hope, hope all good things.
We're doing our best.
Thank you, man.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care, fellas.
Hey, you too.
See ya.
Thanks.
Through the floorboard, he ran to his nest.
So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That was my conversation with the fellas in the Day of the Beast. The song you just heard was Enter the Witch House. It has a very cool video, which of course we talked about, that you can find online, wherever you can find music videos. You know the place to go. It's called YouTube. My daughter just had a birthday. We gave her a YouTube cake because that's what she wanted, a cake that had the YouTube logo on it. God damn, was that sad. It's a very disappointing moment for me as a father, but it's also very exciting that I have an 8-year-old daughter. Anyway, that's going to be it for this week. Gettingitout.net on the way. As always, you can always count on the fact that it's always coming eventually. On Facebook, getting_it_out_podcast and facebook.com/gettingitoutpodcast. That's where you can keep up with everything that's happening here. I'm going to end this one from death metal master Cerebral Rot. They just put out this killer album that I'm sure you've heard by now, so we're a couple weeks behind on that. But this song is called Vile Yolk of Contagion. You can get it from 20 Buck Spin Records. Go find it now, but first, listen to this track. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.